Should they tell you if it's going to flood at the place you're renting? I'm David Brancaccio. Good morning. First, if you want to fit in among Federal Reserve policymakers, pay attention to the Commerce Department's Personal Consumption Expenditure Index, it's called. The news this morning is that this key inflation indicator rose more than expected, 3.1% in April. Couple that with brisk spending that many have been doing, and it adds up to a briskly recovering economy. Chris Lowe is the chief economist at FHN Financial in New York.
Part of this is something they call base effects. That is, we look at inflation as a trailing 12-month change. And 12 months ago, of course, was the lockdown. So prices plunged back then. And when those fall out of year-on-year calculations, it's going to mean that the year-on-year change is bigger. But the other thing that's going on is bottlenecks. There's not enough stuff. Part of that is logistical problems. There's shipping delays. There's manufacturing delays. But, you know, the flip side of the bottleneck story is that no one, retailers certainly, wouldn't be able to raise prices if demand wasn't strong. Consumption rose 0.6% in April, which is an outsized gain on top of an even bigger increase in March. Of course, March and April both boosted by the recent stimulus.
And when you add all this up, there's a lot of strength here coming into the summer.
The U.S. economy is roaring. And, you know, based on what we saw in the first 4 months of the year, our forecast now is 7.5% GDP growth for the entire year, which would be the best since 1950.
1950. Wish I could say I remember those days, but I can look them up. Chris Lowe is chief economist at FHN Financial. Thanks so much.
Thank you, David.
Let's do the numbers in early trading. The Dow is up 144 points, 0.4%, a similar percentage rise for the NASDAQ here. The S&P 500 is up 0.3%. And after a long four-month pause, General Motors says it's going to restart production lines at four car and SUV factories that had been stopped because of the worldwide shortage of microprocessor chips. There's news the Biden administration is trying to address the root causes of migration from Central America by improving economic opportunity in Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. The administration is starting new collaborations with the private sector, with Vice President Kamala Harris approaching a range of companies, including Microsoft and MasterCard. Marketplace's Justin Ho has that.
The plan is to boost investment in improving public health, food security, access to credit. The goal is to reduce the number of children fleeing their home countries and migrating to the U.S.
What we find is most people would really prefer to remain home, but conditions in their home countries don't allow them to do so.
That's Wendy Young, president of Kids in Need of Defense, a group co-founded by Microsoft that provides legal services to unaccompanied children. Young says private companies can help ensure that those investments are long-term.
Corporations can come in and sustain their activities regardless of who might be sitting in the White House in the United States.
Plus, it's going to take a long time for economies in Central America to recover from the pandemic, says Harvard economist Kenneth Rogoff.
We're talking not just about a bad year or two, but probably about 5 to 10 years.
Rogoff says more private investment will help, but the first order of business should be getting more COVID vaccines into Central America. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Microsoft has issued a warning that a Russian-based hacking group that got into government computers far and wide last year is at it again, with a new campaign targeting government and nonprofits connected to foreign policy. Last year, this group called Nobelium got in through vulnerabilities in systems from a U.S. company called SolarWinds. Now it's email accounts at 150 organizations with the apparent entry point, an email service used by the U.S. Agency for Overseas Development. The vectors were emails that fool people into opening them, phishing with a P. It's not clear how many attempts actually worked. Where there's risk, there is insurance. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here with more on cyber insurance.
David, the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack, remember that one just 3 weeks ago? Well, it's prompting more energy companies to act. There are anecdotal reports that they're calling insurance providers to get coverage for cyber attacks. And that's a change because according to the research from Moody's, the energy sector is particularly behind in protecting itself against cyber attacks.
Why is that?
Well, cyber insurance is expensive. It's hard to quantify risk from hackers. So is insurance worth it? It's hard for companies to know for sure. This is especially true for energy companies in terms of their systems because they've often not been as exposed to the internet as, say, banks have been. And according to one estimate, only about half of the pipeline companies in the U.S. have cyber insurance.
What do you get when you get these policies?
Well, believe it or not, it often actually covers ransom payments. And insurers can even provide negotiators to talk to the hackers. In Colonial's case, we know they had cyber insurance and that they paid. They haven't said where the money came from, whether it was the insurance policy or the company. By the way, paying is what the FBI advises not to do because it encourages hackers to target more victims. And the more victims, the higher the cyber insurance premiums, David.
All right. Marketplace's Nova Safo. Thank you. Texas could soon become the state with the toughest rules on letting renters know if they're planning on living in a place at risk to flooding. Often landlords don't have to tell tenants the water can run deep at the property. Houston Public Media's Jen Rice has more on proposed legislation in the Texas legislature that will be of interest to tenants around the country.
Tracy Quach, a piano teacher in Houston, toured a first-floor apartment when she was looking for a home for her and her kids.
And I remember walking in, being very specific, and asking them, hey, has this place ever flooded?
She says management said no, and so she moved in. But less than a month later, Hurricane Harvey hit. 4 feet of water flooded her apartment, and she lost nearly everything. The furniture she'd just bought, her kids' artwork, even her husband's ashes.
They really should have been upfront and honest, because what I learned was that this was not the first time that they flooded. They had most certainly flooded before.
In Texas, as in many states, property owners have to disclose flood risk information to home buyers, but not to renters. Now, State Representative Armando Wally's bill would give renters a similar warning.
What we would want from the landlords would be just to give a simple notice that the place has been flooded before or is in the 100-year floodplain.
The bill passed in both the House and Senate and now goes to the governor. David Mintz is vice president of government affairs with the Texas Apartment Association. He says the statewide group that represents landlords is on board.
We feel that it takes a reasonable approach to providing people with the information that they need while not imposing any undue burdens on property owners.
The impact could be enormous, especially in the Houston area, where nearly 500,000 renters live in a floodplain, according to research from the Kinder Institute at Rice University. Housing advocate Chriselle Pillay, executive director of Home Coalition, says the bill would give renters a chance to make informed choices.
You know, I think a lot of times the automatic response is, well, you know, if they have renter's insurance, they'll be protected. But that's not true.
A standard renter's insurance policy typically doesn't cover flooding. Tracy Quach's policy didn't reimburse her for any of the belongings she lost, though fortunately, she was able to salvage her piano. In Houston, I'm Jen Rice for Marketplace.
The sometimes perverse bond market this morning, despite news of more inflation than expected, the 10-year Treasury steady. 10-year interest rate, 1.6%. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.